Danny and Dusty.
All right, my rock smashes your scissors.
No, not these scissors, pal. This is a special titanium steel alloy developed by NASA for the space program. These scissors that smash the Raptor smithereens.
No, not this rack. This rack happens to be kryptonite.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
No!
The Fan.
Hour number two here on Danny and Dusty on a, good God, Tuesday afternoon. Because, again, I can never remember what day of the week it is. People think it's a bit. I don't. I don't remember what day of the week it is most days. That's just how it goes. Whether you're listening on 1080AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan, we appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for being a part of our show and hanging out with us wherever you are. Dusty is trying to track down, I think, Alex Molden, who's here in the building right now. In the meantime, just some news and notes from our thoughts from you guys on the text line. And we talked about the potential for a Giannis deal. And oh, there's Dusty. We got Alex? No? Okay.
Sorry, I got caught in the hallway.
Yeah,
no,
what happens?
I got caught in the hallway with the sales guys talking running shoes.
Mm.
I'm not equipped to have that conversation. I'm learning that.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, they're talking... the big things on running shoes.
Oh, we talking Hood to Coast?
No. No, I'm not talking Hood to Coast. No, we got Dave in the sales office.
Oh, yeah.
Sales Dave.
Yeah.
He is running a race where it's basically 12 hours and you run, like, so you're not running for time. You're running for distance, where they have like a mile and a half loop of this race. Basically, you just run however much you can in that time. And I was like, that sounds miserable.
I want no part of that.
Yeah, but he is also an ultra. He wants to do an ultra marathon.
Which is a double, right? So it's 50K. 54 miles?
Yeah.
52 miles?
It's a very long way. And he's like, I want to see if I can do it. And I was like, I don't have any
desire to go anywhere near that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this runner's high, but I don't know what that means. Like I have run long distances before in my life. I don't get what the idea of the runner's high is. Like people are like, God, yeah, you don't feel great after running. I'm like, no, I never feel that way.
I've had it a couple times, but it's not something that's just like there all the time.
No, they're like, well, how about when you get a couple miles into a run? I'm like, no.
I've never been a distance guy as it pertains to running. Never. Ever,
no.
Ever.
I mean, look, I quit running track in college because I hated running.
Mm.
And that's just kind of the way that I've been wired. It's like, I just don't like running long.
What's the furthest you've ever done?
In a run?
Yeah. I've done a half.
I think 10 miles, probably the most I've ever run.
I did a half when I was in the Air Force. That's the most I've ever done, and I hated life.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, we had this brutal workout in college where you have to run like 3 miles, and you'd have to do it. Like you would run 3 miles in one direction and they'd have like a truck set up and you hop in the truck if you make it in time. If not, they're gone. And they'd leave in like 18 minutes. I'm like, I'm not built for that.
So you have to have
six minute miles.
Six or under, yeah.
No. I'm not doing that. So I never made it.
Yeah.
Motivated to get there because I didn't want to walk back.
At my best, I could have run that, but I would have been very angry about it.
Yeah. Hey, this is a good text, though. I do feel that way after a good workout in the gym, though. Yes, the endorphin release and, like,
yes,
the idea of a runner's high. I know what that feels like after a good workout. I just never feel it running.
No.
Never have I ever.
I feel a million times better after I lift, as opposed to, like, I'm talking, like, lifting to, like, the most insane levels, like, where you've got nothing left, as opposed to running, where you've got nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
I'll lift over run every single time.
You know, like this, I don't like to run unless it's necessary. My runner's high is usually the fear of getting caught from behind. Yes. Mm. Yes. Yes. Running, that is my motivator.
Running enough so that if you did have to run, you don't tear a hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at in life now.
Yeah. And then the idea of, like, when I have my wife and my friends, they run, they're like, you know, it's good to kind of just decompress and you get away from all your thoughts. I'm like, I'm my worst enemy on runs. Like, I just sit there and...
Angry?
Yes.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I raced my nephew probably over, like, 35, 40 yards. Was it Easter?
Calling that a run? Going for a run?
Oh, no. Just a quick little race.
Yeah.
He's like, Uncle D, I want to race. And I was like... This is a bad idea, but yep. All right, let me humble the little kid real quick. And it wasn't a problem beating him.
Mm.
But when I was running, it was at my sister's house in the backyard. One thing I didn't consider, my big butt and stopping.
Yeah, absolutely.
At full speed. Thankfully, she's got like 6 feet of pea gravel between the end of the grass and the fence. And I could hear my sister go, oh, and thankfully I was able to slam the brakes like a freaking plane in the pea gravel and slow down.
Well, that's runner's highs. All right. On to bigger and better things. We have got Alex Molden.
Hey, there we go.
He is going to stop by. He's got a new book that has just been released today. He's a great dude. If you've never heard Alex Molden talk before, he's a former Duck. First-round draft pick by the New Orleans Saints. He's got a son in the NFL, and he's a state champion, too. Danny Dusty on the Fan. We are very happy to have him with us. Sitting in studio with us right now is a former Duck, first-round draft pick, and longtime NFL veteran. Now he's just winning state championships at Westland High School, along with Anthony Newman. Alex Molden joining us. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You just released your second book, mm-hmm. Breaking on the Ball of Life. I can't think of a better title for a book written by a defensive back than Breaking on the Ball of Life, man.
Let's go.
What got you into writing books now as this next chapter of your life?
Man, I never in a million years thought I would write a book, you know, let alone two.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have like people who challenge you, right? When you have, I have a coach, his name is Eldridge Broussard. And he challenged me to be number one, to be a better person. Right. And then also, like, he helps me with, man, my brand and what I wanted to create. And so he challenged me to write a book. And so I did that the first time. And that was a couple of years ago. And he said, hey, it's about time again. And I was like, oh, you know how hard that was. But, yeah, I end up, you know, just kind of sitting down and like, man, just mapping out like the decisions that helped me have success on the football field. Right. And those same principles can apply in life. Like for me to make, you know, interceptions or whatnot, it wasn't just I was out there guessing. Like I had to take in information. I had to process that information at a fairly high rate and then produce an outcome. Well, if you can do those things when you have, let's say, opportunities, right? And a lot of us, we get attached to the feeling of the opportunity. It can be good, bad, whatever, but you get attached to this feeling, and it might be a good feeling. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's a great idea for what you want to build in the future. So I teach, and I talked about in the book, alignment, assignment, and then adjustment. Like, is this aligned to who you are, to your character, or the brand that you're trying to build? Right. With this decision. And then your assignment, like who you are, like understanding, like, man, where do you what is your purpose? Right. And or where do you want your purpose to be? And then the different adjustments that you might need to make in terms of like relationships that you have. So, you know, it's just these things that help me out to do something a very small percentage of humans, you know, get to do is play professional mm-hmm. sports, and to do it for, you know, 8 years, which I didn't know this, but only 3% of those guys who got drafted the other day, only 3% play 8 or more years.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not because of my looks, right? I thought it would, but it's not because of my look. It's not, you know, the speed, the size, definitely not my size, but it was, man, I was able to make pretty damn good decisions.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can, you know, we all have that capacity to be able to do that and make decisions to, you know, what you want to do with your life.
You bring up 2 points that something I talk to a lot of guys about just across sports, particularly in basketball, but I would imagine it's probably the same in football because of so much time and dedication, the assignment and the adjustment. How were you able to conquer that? Because you had a career, like you said, for 8 years, that becomes almost synonymous with who you are. How were you able to process that? Because that seems to be one of the hardest things for professional athletes who have, like you said, more than, because the average NFL career is 3.5 years.
Yep.
So you more than double that. So the investment in that and the assignment of that, how do you go from that to kind of where you are now? Like, I imagine you probably outlined some of that in the book.
Yeah.
But that process, because it becomes synonymous, like you said, with who you are. Yeah. How are you able to step back and see that in the moment? Because it seems like that is one of the strongest barriers for prior athletes to conquer.
Yeah. What happens when you're doing something like at a high level and you have to be dedicated to it, you have to, like what they say, eat, sleep, drink, whatever,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? You have to be careful with that because it can become your identity. Mm-hmm. Especially if you have relationships that are like, you know, in your household that they're pouring in that too, right? And it starts to become like who you are. And when you step away from it, whether you want to or not, you like, you're lost. And I was one of those, like, you know, I was one of those guys who, when I stepped away from the game and I was like, oh man, this, I'm really am. I don't know what I, you know, who I am. You know, what's my purpose? What do I like? What I don't like? And for me, it came in the form of a job interview. I was not even a whole year removed from the game, and I was getting bored just playing golf and working out whenever I wanted to. If you can believe that, I was like, man, I got bored.
It sounds great. It sounds great, but then you do it,
and you do it, and it's like, man, dropping off the kids, playing golf, working out. I said, man, there's got to be more than this. And I ended up going on a job interview at a nonprofit. And it was an entry level position. And I did all my homework. I went in there and, man, I was killing it. The interview, killing it. Because I did all the things that helped me on the field. I applied it to this. Mm-hmm. Until she started asking me questions about me. And everything out of my mouth had something to do with football. And she finally stopped the interview. She said, Alex, you're not going to get this job. And she said, let me give you some advice. You need to find out exactly who you are before you go on any more job interviews. And so she walked me to the front door, told me good luck. And that's when I went in my car and I wept. I cried. Mm-hmm. And that was painful. But I understand, like, man, with pain, if you can channel it, it can become your greatest asset. And so that low point, man, helped me start, like, figuring out about leadership,
yeah,
which is influence. But the number one person I have to influence is me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to find out what those influencers are. Like, why do I make the decisions I make? Why do I have, you know, these relationships with people who don't really align with who I'm about? You know, so once I started finding out more about me, and then, you know, and start asking myself pretty tough questions, but then answering them, then everything started to kind of clear up, and I became just as confident, if not more, as I was on the football field, and became confident in the decisions I was making and the relationships that I was building.
Isn't that amazing, though, that you took, you know, a piece of advice that, hey, you need to get outside of that football orbit, but you used what you'd learned in that orbit to grow and find yourself and who you are.
But let me tell you something. I was in my feelings.
Yeah, oh yeah.
For a long time. Yeah, you know, it would be cool if I was tell that story. And yeah. I was like, in the next day, everything changed. Man, it took years, right? It took years for me to, like, really start to, you know, ask those questions and answering them and you know, start to really figure out, like, man, what's my purpose?
Yeah.
And so I've always wanted to help people. And at first it was like, man, I want to help athletes become better athletes. So I started training.
Yeah.
And that took off. It went great. But then I started to get into leadership and, you know, it started at home first.
Alex Molden is our guest. He was a former Oregon Duck, 11th overall pick. You were talking about these guys that had gotten their name called over the weekend. It's the biggest moment in their life. And one of your sons, Elijah, just re-signed with the Los Angeles Chargers yesterday is when the news broke of that. I imagine that a lot of what you were doing is you were going through what you were just describing to us was, you know, at the formative years that Elijah is growing up and all of your kids. And how did you take kind of those things when you see your child is a gifted athlete and you've got several gifted athletes for children, but in translating that and just kind of keeping that focus on who they are as people, not just athletes that everybody gets wrapped up in when you're going through sports.
Yeah, man. The biggest one is like, my wife and I is we're more concerned about the character of our kids. And we want them to score all type of touchdowns and three pointers and, you know, do all that good stuff. But when somebody comes to me and I don't ask them and they come to me and they tell me something that my son or daughters have done that was, they was thinking of somebody else, they was helping somebody else, I'll do backflips, right? Me and my wife, we would do backflips. We would go above and beyond to celebrate that above what you do in your sport. Because in sports, there's a shelf life, right? I can't go out there at 51 and try to backpedal and flip my hips and turn and cover somebody, right? Those doors close, but who you are, that lasts forever. So we want our kids to, you know, number one, be good people. And number two is like, man, create relationships, you know, with those within our family, but then also, man, to help other people.
How hard is that to navigate in today's world with youth sports?
Man, it's tough because parents nowadays and, you know, because I'm in the stands. Mm-hmm. And I hear to have the conversations. And because we have eight kids, you know, people think that we have a lot of the answers, which we don't. But it's like, you know, but what I hear is like, man, people think that they're missing out by having their son or daughters in this one sport, and they're doing it year round. And when you do that, it's dangerous because that's how, you know, your identity gets formed. Mm-hmm. All right. And outside of like the injuries that can happen with that too, but it's like, man, there's more to it than just being a good athlete and good in your sport. And like use that sport as a vehicle and understand like everything is connected. The little things that you do at home, they have the potential to doing and helping you out in your sport. The same thing though on the other side of it, you keep leaving crumbs out and you expect mom or dad to clean it up. That stuff, if it's not checked, man, when later on down the road, you know, that can hurt you. You think somebody else is going to do it.
Especially with eight kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a lot of crumbs.
Dude, think about this, man. You the crumbs, or our biggest thing is shoes.
Oh.
You leave your shoes out, and then so think even eight people leaving their shoes out, right? Man, you'd be tripping all day.
Yeah, yeah. But it becomes bigger things in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one thing that I appreciate. You know, when you win titles, especially at the high school level, all of a sudden your program becomes like the big bad villain. But mm-hmm. one thing that I love about what you guys have going on at West Lynn is that you guys have got Coach Eagle, you, Coach Newman, and several others that it is about that character building just as much as it is about winning the football games. Like everybody's like, well, why are all these kids, you know, popping up at West Lynn? It's like, well, I have a pretty good reason. And it's because it's a lot more than just winning the football games is why that happens.
Man, it's more than just the W's. Mm-hmm. And we use that, I think, for myself. I can speak for myself, and I've seen Coach Eagle, and the reason why I'm still coaching is because of him and Coach Newman, because the people that they are. They want to make our athletes better people. And so I was like, I'm all in. And they don't just say it, is they match it with their words or with their actions and how to respond to different things. So it's about making better people, better people in the community. Yeah. And the wins and all that stuff, that's I don't know, that's shrapnel. It's a byproduct. Yeah. But what's really cool is when we get text messages from players who've, you know, 5 years down the, you know, who hasn't played five, six, 7 years, and they ask us for a recommendation for jobs or, you know, to come to their wedding. I mean, that's, you know, come on, man.
It is one of the cooler things is, and we talk about this with Anthony all the time, is that Coach Newman, he's getting the hugs from all of his former players that are playing on the field, but it's the reaction when there's a former player that's in the stands that yells back at him and he goes up, and it's just, it's the same reaction because those guys' playing days are done. They're up in the stands, but that is what, that's why you love sports, and that's why you want to give back and still coach. I mean,
absolutely.
It is the best part of it all. Yeah. You were down in Eugene on Saturday.
Yeah.
And for the spring game with your son Josiah, who is another highly touted recruit out of the Molden family. It was amazing to see. And you played in the spring games in the 90s where it was just another practice, but you guys got to hit each other. 40,000 people plus. It was incredible down there.
That was the amount of hype that I would have had, or that I would have loved to play a spring game in front of 40,000. Are you kidding me? Maybe 3,000, 5,000 back in the day. We can hear conversations in there, put like that. But that was really cool. And, you know, for him to experience that and to see, you know, what University of Oregon is doing with under Coach Lanning and where they're going, it's like, I want to get them down there as much as I can. I don't want anybody to tell him this, though, because I want him to make his own decision. I'm just trying to, like, lead it. And, yeah, it's a great decision if you choose to go here. It's your decision. So I just try to, you know, what'd you say, lead a horse to water?
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying. I'm trying to do, but I'm trying to be very smooth about it.
It's a big pond down there.
Yeah, yeah. Not like back in the day, yeah.
The book is Breaking on the Ball of Life. It is your second book. It was just released yesterday, so yeah. Congratulations on book number two.
Thank
hitting
you.
The bookstores, and it's on. I saw it on Amazon, so you can pick it up wherever you want to get it. It's awesome, valuable tools for life in what you've learned from the field.
Absolutely, and you know, it's just like, man, the different experiences that we have in our different worlds. It's like, man, if you can extract like the good, the bad, the hey, look out for this. And be able to give like some type of framework for people, why not do it?
We need to get you in during football season. We can actually talk about the Ducks. We can talk about Elijah and the Chargers this year.
Big year coming up for them.
And
I'm very excited.
He's got a Duck that they just drafted, and Jamari Caldwell too, right in the middle.
So there you have it. You got to have more Ducks than dogs in any NFL team. If you can do that, I think great things can happen.
I love it, man. Thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And good luck with the new book. Breaking on the Ball of Life is Alex Molden's new book. And look, I feel like I learned something just sitting here listening to you on the growth and kind of using that mindset. But mostly it made me feel a lot better. I have two kids that you don't have all the answers even with eight, and you've been through it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Every parent has that. I don't know how to tackle this one.
Always game planning.
We try.
The biggest, hey, you got to stay a united unit between you and mama. Right? You and your wife, you got to, hey, you have the connected unit.
That's why the kids
stay together.
When I was younger, man, divide and conquer. I knew what I was doing.
See, agent of chaos over there. That's where he thrives. That's where he thrives. Nah.
All right, coming up next, we're going to dive into our worst day on the web. And, well, it's just, you know, things happen. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
Hamburgers, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
That sucks.
All right. When these go viral, it's always an interesting discussion. It was the what was it last year? The four animals in a cage? Was it the snake, the bear?
Yeah, it was
the lion,
bear, snake,
gorilla.
No, gorilla was not in it. I don't. Well, he may have been in that.
I feel like silverback was in there.
Yeah, because the big one was, all right, who's coming out? Because it was, yeah, snake, lion, bear, gorilla. Mm-hmm. And it came down to the grizzly and the gorilla for mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I still contend grizzly. Yeah, gorilla is very, very strong.
It is, but I was the default position is opposable thumbs.
Yeah, yeah, but claws and teeth.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Claws and teeth.
Silverback got those, though, too.
They got the teeth. They got the teeth. But this one is, I can't figure out which side I am on this.
And if you're wondering what that is, it's 100. Could 100 people take down a silverback gorilla?
Could 100 people? Now, here's the 100 people is a lot of people against mm-hmm. one gorilla. But the idea that people can sit there and definitively say, oh, 100 guys going to take out a gorilla. I think you're wrong, because I think it's going to take highly trained and skilled fighters to take out one silverback gorilla.
And you're going to have to do it. Here's the thing. It's like you talk about 100. Well, you just surround him. Well, only what? At most 10, 12 people can get to it?
Yeah. And that's where the problem.
And who's going to be the one that gets to it and is able to hold on so everybody else can get to it?
Yes. Now, did you know, now I don't know the kg 2 pounds. Did you know, oh my gosh.
Gorilla weighs like what, 450 pounds?
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But somebody did like all of the math on this. And basically, here's how it breaks down. So a gorilla can lift up to 1,700 pounds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can run 25 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
has a bite force of 1,300 PSI.
Which is double that of a lion.
And so with a swing of an arm, mm-hmm. when you take those things into consideration, the sheer force, strength, in speed of mm-hmm. the gorilla, they could kill a human with one punch.
Mm-hmm.
They could crush your bones with one bite,
mm-hmm.
and they can run 25 miles an hour,
which is faster than basically everyone not named Usain Bolt.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're speeding in the school zone right there. Mm-hmm. You're not going. You don't want to go over that in a school zone. That's how big, strong, and fast these animals are. Also, their bone structure, like he broke down like bone structure, mm-hmm. bone density, and muscle structure. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like their skulls are thick. So like there's no way that in a fist fight, and that's the parameters mm-hmm. of this, right? No weapons. This is a fist fight. We are like it's 300 and you got like the sand pit, right?
Mm-hmm.
No rocks are around. So you can't like whack it over the head. We're just going fist fight, 100 dudes.
Mm-hmm.
A human is not going to knock out because of their skull. You're not going to knock out a gorilla. So you got to choke this gorilla out.
Mm-hmm.
And then with how strong they are, you have to think that you have to have at least four humans
on each limb
mm-hmm. holding on while somebody tries to choke this thing out. Which, by the way, if one guy gets his arm bit as he's trying to choke this thing out, that bone is broken. You have to have another bro come in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's going to be a substantial loss of life here.
100%.
You have to like wear this thing down. You got to go in waves.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, the first couple dudes, you're dead.
Yeah, you're gonna die.
If you're not dead, you're
not getting back in the fight.
Yeah. No. You are gonna have to tap out.
You're the red uniform in Star Trek.
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Yes, you are.
You're done. Like that's just you're gonna get guys loss of limb.
Human
loss of
shield.
Life. Like,
you are a human shield at that point.
And you're hoping probably when you get through the first 40 that you can kind of wear it down. And if you can just kind of pile on top of it, like once you can do that, and hell, one guy's not going to knock it out, but you get enough people swinging, punching, doing enough damage that You wear it down.
Soften them up in the belly.
Yeah.
Just like, and that's the other thing, too, is that you got to have, like, so you're talking about 16 of your 100.
On limbs.
Need to have a coordinated attack mm-hmm. to get to the limbs, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to think of this. Right out the get-go, you're losing 10.
Yeah.
You're losing 10.
Bare minimum.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm being nice to the humans. You're going to lose 10. Okay, so you're at 90. 16 of those 90 are going to be on the limbs trying to keep the arm straight.
And you're going to lose some through that process. Because here's the thing. As much as you talk about, well, you just kind of circle around it. Well, I'm like, remember, this thing can move. And not only can it run, it can jump.
So at that point, before anybody, and we're getting this on the fan text line, 503-864-6326, you got to get somebody to go for the eyes.
Oh, you got to go for the soft spots.
Like, you're going for the eyes, and then somebody's got to, like, you have to have waves of dude just coming up and softening, punching him in the belly.
Nuts.
Right? Yeah, we're not fighting fair.
Oh, no, God,
you cannot fight fair in this, because this is the only way the humans win.
The way you need to do this is you need to have 100 Nate Diaz's.
Yeah.
You need to have 100 psychopaths.
Bam, 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 bam. And then, once you get him softened up a little bit, that's when you got to come in over the top. That's the only way that this happens. But in all of this, I still think you're losing
half.
Yeah.
Half.
And look, as this text points out, you're probably going to lose a large swath of the people once that gorilla rips the first person in half. They're just like, nope, deuces, I'm out.
And starts swinging it around like a weapon.
Yeah. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Because here's the thing. It can just rip limbs off.
Yeah.
It can just rip. There was, is it the howler monkey that people like tried to make a pet? Have you seen the photos of those people?
No, I know chimpanzees will do that.
That's
though.
What it was. The
chimpanzees
ripped whole faces off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And chimps are nowhere near a silverback gorilla.
No.
It's tearing your head off, tearing your arm off, tearing your leg off. Like, it's just going to, I mean, that's the thing is, like, that's why you need psychopaths.
And
they're going to see some nasty, gruesome stuff.
Yeah.
And got to keep going.
But get in there with the Expendables.
Here's the thing. It is super easy to say, four guys on each limb. How do you get them there?
Yeah.
Though? Like, that is the thing, is that.
Because it's going to swing.
Yeah, one guy can't grab the arm and then another guy grab the arm and be like, we're good. No, like all four have to grab at the same time. So that's why I'm saying, like, I think I'm taking the gorilla in
this. You have to, like, you have to get lucky and get this thing on the ground and pile on.
Yeah.
Because even then, you're going to struggle. Basically, you're just hoping you can asphyxiate this thing enough.
That's
just wear it down. Because
rope-a-dope it.
I mean,
you just let him take out the first 80 the last 20 standing are the ones that do it. You just let him swing himself out. But that's the other thing. I don't know if they get tired.
Mm.
I've never seen this. I don't know. I'm assuming probably not.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd trust 100 against a lion. No, I didn't think. I would trust 100 against a lion before I would a gorilla, let alone the grizzly's the other one. Like,
yep.
You're not getting that.
Mm-mm. No, not without a weapon.
Although, the video of the black bear that's scratching his back on the post and the rope comes back and hits him in the nuts? You've seen that video, right?
Yes.
I think it's a black bear. I don't think it's a grizzly, if
no,
I remember right.
I think it's a black bear, too.
Yeah, because I don't remember it being a towering monstrosity. I remember it being big, but not the biggest damn thing I've ever seen.
Holy, grizzly's still going to outrun you, though, too, right?
Yes,
oh,
they
yeah.
Are.
Yeah.
But yes, that's the thing.
Are.
Is like, you have to go for the nuts.
No, yeah, I mean.
No matter what, grizzly, gorilla, doesn't matter. You got to, like, you got to speed bag that thing.
Yeah, yeah, well, and again, good luck getting in there.
The first guy that walks up and punches it, and then it just rips him in half,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be the one where, as this text says, you got to take fear and emotion out of it for the sake of this argument. You can't have any emotions heading into this. You can't assume that anybody has fear. But the second that happens, I don't know how anybody could just be like, yep, I'm next. I'm going into that. This, I don't even know where these things start on the internet either. But the amount...
Very stupid questions.
Will Darkens.
The amount of thought that has gone into this... Like, just looking at some of, like, the research that people have done, I mean, if the gorilla just want, because they have reach, too, right? There's outside of...
They're big.
...intellect, there are very few advantages that humans would have on them. So, imagine this. Gorilla goes helicopter, right? You want to converge on him? He just starts spinning with his big old fists of fury out there, and he's just spinning around. I don't know how you get to him. How are you going to get to him?
Well, because we've seen him do it, too, from that one viral video of the gorilla dancing in the kiddie pool set to the tune of Flashdance.
I don't know that. Mm. I want to see it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've not seen that. Yeah,
I showed Dusty earlier the video of the gorilla at the zoo where the kids are tapping on the glass and the gorilla just meanders over and not even like violently, but just kind of like get away from my glass, hits the glass and damn near shatters it. And that glass, it ain't thin.
It's not something I want to be a part of.
No.
Not one bit.
No.
All right.
Oof.
What do you say? Final verdict?
No.
Man or
gorilla?
Gorilla? Rust? Man or gorilla?
Oh, it's the gorilla.
Okay.
Have you ever seen what a gorilla, a silverback gorilla's teeth look like?
It's
They're as long as our fingers,
yeah,
and they're thicker than your thumbs.
I'm
like,
going gorilla.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. Now, what if it's 100 Ditkas?
Ditkas?
Hmm?
Hmm.
Mike Ditka.
Look, if you're telling me that I have 100 Brian Shaws.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Well, so what if it's 100 Ditkas, but versus a silverback Ditka?
Oh, silverback named Ditka.
Yeah. For those who are not aware, Brian Shaw is the world's strongest man. He does things that you can't imagine. He's 6'8", 440 pounds.
Oh, now here's one. Mm. What if you, in mom mode, protecting its baby. So what if you go, you put 100 moms in there with their children?
That's a lot of dead babies.
Whoa, children are safe. They're on the edges. But mom strength is real.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I've seen my wife run faster than I did not know was humanly possible. And mom mode is real.
I
lift cars off of kids.
They're lifting a car here.
Mm. Oh, here's a good one. I'd argue a gorilla is more intelligent than any human willing to try this. I would tend to agree.
Again, that's why I said you got to have like 100 Diazes.
Yeah. Take all the on-air 1080 the personalities against the gorilla. Who's the last one to be taken out? See, this is where you have to go gorilla mentality. Mm-hmm. He's going after Sook first. They'll go after the biggest one first.
Yeah.
So, dirt?
Dirt.
Dirt?
Dirt. Dirt's the least threat.
He's like, whoa, man.
He's the least threat.
Easy. Whoa.
Sprague's still moving.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the morning show's got a good chance. Rust.
Hmm.
He's going to be like, he's going to look at Rust and Rust is just going to take his shirt off. He's going to be like,
one of us.
I got silverback right there.
Oh, by the way, I have to correct myself. It wasn't set to the Flashdance. It was set to Maniac. So I'm tweeting it out right now.
Even correct.
A link to the YouTube.
Correction noted.
Yes.
Even better.
Correction noted. No, I don't think this show has pivoted from such a thoughtful segment to something like this as quick as we have.
No.
From Alex Molden, which was a great,
yeah.
great conversation.
Inspiring, very motivating, thoughtful.
Yeah, and then it just ended up coming to...
Could 100 dudes fight a silverback?
Hey, that pendulum's always got to swing back the other direction,
boy,
right?
You're not wrong.
That's how we balance things here.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah,
All right.
Well, that's our worst day of the web today. Coming up next, the NBA early entrance entrance has been announced, and there's been a pretty shocking change as far as how things are going in the NBA and the NBA draft. We'll talk about that next year on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. Oh, some news coming out of the NBA with the NBA lottery less than 2 weeks away.
I'll tell you what, I saw that video Russ just tweeted out at 1080 The Fan. There ain't no way any humans are getting close to that gorilla if he spins like that.
Look.
No.
There was a movie of I can't remember what it was, where the kid's like, I'll just spin around like this with my fists out. And it's like, that's all I could think of, but I can't remember the movie. I'll have to deep dive that
one. All right, draft lottery. Sorry. This is.
No.
I'll talk about silverback gorillas all day long.
No, I'm all about it. But no, the NBA draft lottery, May 12th, the deadline for the early entrance was just the other day. And so what the NBA draft early entrance means is the guys that put in for that can still withdraw from the draft and maintain their eligibility. The interesting thing about it is that the number has fallen off a cliff precipitously. Now, there's a couple different things that are important about this. Number one, NIL era and guys returning to college basketball and staying in college longer. That is a real implication. The other part of this is, though, the COVID years are expiring.
Yep.
Now, we may run into a point here sometime in the very near future where eligibility doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very real thing that's probably coming down the pipe.
Well, and on the NIL front, there's quite literally hundreds of college basketball players making over $1 million.
Look,
hundreds.
Somebody not on this list that I found very surprising, UConn's Alex Caravan, who was 2 years ago, was a guy who was a fringe first round pick. I heard he got $3 million to go back to UConn last year. Significantly more than the $800,000 he would have made as a second round pick or a guy who gets a two-way contract that's not guaranteed. Today, he announced that he is returning to UConn again because I've seen him in mocks and I've talked to people around the league. He was basically in the exact same position because he didn't have as great a year as probably people expected him to. He probably also got another $3 million to go back to UConn.
Yep.
Which is significantly more, again, than you're going to make as a second-round prospect.
Well, if you just think of it in these... well, that's an outdated one. Never mind. The rookie slotting for each pick, mm-hmm. it goes down in the NBA.
Yes.
Year by year.
13 or 14 for the number one overall pick this year.
$13-14 million.
Yeah, I got to remember... I have to look at it and see what it slots at because it's a percentage deal. It goes up every year.
Well, for last year's, it was $10.5 million influx of money. This
the
past
new TV
year
deal, it's going to bump up a little bit up. More. Yeah.
So 10.5, and then so say you're a fringe lottery guy, right? So you're in that 13-22
mm-hmm.
slot. The 13th pick in last year's draft, $3.9 million. 22, $2.6 million. Mm-hmm. So when you say Alex Caravan, who is a fringe first round guy, got $3 million to return to UConn last year, if he was at the end of the first round, you're looking at $2.08 million mm-hmm. as the 30th overall pick. You can get lottery money by returning to UConn for one more year. That is a huge factor in all this. And then mm-hmm. that's not to say, like, some of these guys... You know, we heard the Cooper Flag number was going to be, mm-hmm. was $8 million just from Duke?
Yes.
Just from Duke.
Upwards of 20 when you factor in New Balance and probably Gatorade and all the other ads and national campaigns you're already seeing.
Now, the reason why he's coming back is he still has all of those national ads mm-hmm. campaigns. The NBA is going to pay him more than what Duke was going to be able to pay him.
Yes.
No brainer.
And you're starting the clock. So in 2021... The number of early entrants was 363. You have 60 Yikes. Picks in the draft. 60.
That's a lot.
363 early entrants. It is now down to 106. These are guys that are just staying in school now because of the money. Well, not just because, but like a major factor. And it's good for college basketball. College basketball
great
this year was
hoops.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, a big part of that is this recruiting class that came in was very good.
This is the fewest early entrants in an NBA draft in a decade.
Yes, since 2015.
That is huge for the NBA to get, one, players that are actually ready to go to the NBA. And it's even better for college basketball mm-hmm. that guys are coming back. There are some surprises that were on this list of guys that are going into the NBA.
Look, I understand, like, testing the waters. But then again, that's why you go in as an early entrant, so you can pull yourself out. You go through the combine, you go through some workouts, and then there will be a period after I want to say it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks after the combine, after basically guys have gone through workouts and you've gotten your feedback that you got a...
Nate Biddle might be one of those guys from
Nate
the University of
Look,
Oregon, Crater High, go Comets.
I've talked to a lot of scouts in the NBA about Nate Biddle. I talked to probably about a dozen of them at the Oregon-Rutgers game, and I'll tell you right now, they came out of that game going, he did himself some work here. Look, Biddle I don't think is going to get drafted, but I could very, 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 very easily seeing him getting a two-way / camp invite, play with a team in summer league, because he's 7 foot tall, he protects the rim, and he shoots threes.
In that... You're 7 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a place in the NBA, whether it is a two-way contract, a
Somebody's
stash in the G League.
Somebody's going to give you an opportunity. There's a number that's out there. If you are a legitimate seven-footer, there is an 18% chance just by being a seven-foot-tall male that you will make the NBA.
Should have been 7 feet tall.
It's something like 17.8% of 7 foot males in the world make the NBA.
Hmm.
You have basically a 1 in 5 chance of playing in the NBA just by virtue of being 7 foot tall.
Those are good numbers.
Pretty damn good. Like, if you're talking about like earmarking for something like a physical trait, that's it.
Yeah, being tall.
Gee, thanks, Mom and Dad.
Super helpful. Scarcity of asset. But like, that's, again, Biddle's a guy that's on that list. But on the other side of that spectrum is a guy like Yoxel Lundeberg, who has made himself a ton of money. He played at UAB. He is the guy that I am looking at in this draft that is very much Tumani Kamara.
And his name is Yoxel Lundeberg?
Lundeberg. Yes. He is 6'9", can do basically everything. He can dribble, pass, shoot, defend, just an incredibly good player who is a late developer. He is transferred from UAB to Michigan, but he is testing the waters. I know some teams that would like to take a shot on him outside of the lottery, like basically like 16 to 20. But if he goes to Michigan and does what I think he'll do there, he'll be a no doubt lottery pick next year.
He's also the villain in the upcoming Lethal Weapon 5.
Yeah.
With a name like that.
Well, it's also,
I don't even know where to start spelling that. Is that Yoxel with a J, or is it like a Y? Of course it is.
Y-A-X-E-L.
Not the soft J.
Yeah. And then we were talking about it in the break, another great name.
Wouldn't have gotten that.
Rocco Zakarski.
Mm-hmm.
7'3", big man from Australia.
Great name.
I mean, look, they're...
Rocco Zakarski sounds like a bully in an 80s movie. Yeah. Like, John Hughes was like... Rocco Zakarski.
Now that 3 o'clock high,
they went, that's too much.
Yeah.
They had to back that off.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's like, you take a look at this list. There's a couple of guys I went, okay, like Drake Powell from North Carolina is on this list, and I went,
when you said his name earlier, and when we were in a break, I was like, wait, the guy from Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But again, this does not mean that they are in the NBA draft yet.
It means you're testing the waters and coming back with eligibility.
And I think that is a great thing that the NBA does,
yes,
and the NCAA allows them to do, is go and test those waters.
Get the feedback.
I understand why with the NFL, because the turnaround is so quick from the end of the football season to where the draft is held. But I would love to see that for the NFL as well and in college sports. And look, all it's going to take, somebody is going to not get drafted, have their name in, they're going to sue, and they're going to win.
Yeah.
Like, I know that Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, he floated that idea
in the NFL,
about Shedeur Sanders. Like, when the fourth round wrapped up, he was like, dude, he should just yank his name from the draft right now, go back to Colorado. Actually, I think he said something like he shouldn't go back to Colorado, he should go somewhere else, just so he can prove he can play for somebody else besides his dad.
Tennessee.
Which I think would actually probably have helped him. I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world.
Honestly, look.
But he would have never done it.
Florio said some bat-ass crazy things.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was that far out of bounds.
No.
Imagine he goes to Tennessee and plays for Heupel in a system that makes sense and in a roundabout way bends the knee, shows he has no problem doing that. Now all of a sudden you're going into that class and like, what if he goes out there and balls out at Tennessee and puts himself in a Heisman competition? Like,
yeah, no, I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world. It would have never happened because Deion obviously would not have let that happen because it would have reflected poorly on him.
Mm.
But I think there's a lot of smoke to that fire of NFL teams had a big concern about Shedeur in the fact that he'd never played for anybody but his dad.
Yeah. It's certainly something that reflects. Coming up in hour number 3, you were down at the Oregon spring game.
Yeah.
Let's dive into that next here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.